my love. Fescunul vidu arrubau al rimar. Wahawaki leysa yakfu al jamal. Huma fi mruhi sha'arun.
It's just something that like has been coming back to me again and again, and how like this strange, like almost dialectical, like force of like American whatever culture or like modernity at large, but it particularly like American. This is particularly true for like the country of the U.S., which is, on the one hand, you have the profound like anti-blackness of U.S. history and U.S. empire and its offshoots. Forget like enslavement. You forget Jim Crow. Just like the racialization is so forceful in the U.S. Like it doesn't really compare to anywhere else on the planet. But on the other hand, you also have this weird situation whereby African Americans specifically, and I guess that's true, but let's just say in the context of America, that like Afro-descendant people and like and their various mostly urban communities are the source of immense cultural influence, not source, but like are a vanguard, constitute a vanguard on so many important fronts, like sports, you know, any kind of music, like so many different ways. Like Black people are the cultural vanguard. Like TikTok, the social medias, the influencer status of specifically like at what you could call it like African Americana is so powerful. And and yet at the same time, this is also like the object of so much of like America's like cultural obsession with itself, that like anti-blackness is like just so important to the U.S. It's such like a structuring. I mean, like Donald Trump built his entire brand around
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. It's, you know? It's like the ambient, you know, it's like the ambient background noise of the society that we live in. Right. And I think it's really interesting that you bring up, like, you know, and were you going to ask me a question, or were you just like, because I didn't want to interrupt you if you were, okay.
No, that's the question. No, that's the thing. Like, I'm obsessed with this kind of like structuring force in our like contradiction.
Yeah. So as you were saying, I think that the contradictions are interesting because, like, as you said, African American or Black culture has been such a dominant, it's been a dominant cultural force in this country since, I mean, it's since inception, you know what I'm saying? I mean, I think about, on the one hand, you had minstrels, right, which are these stereotypes, these crude, hyper-racist musicals mocking Black people, and that was a dominant cultural force in the 19th and the 20th century, while at the same time, you know, you had musical artists, I mean, much later in the 20th century, people like Elvis Presley or the Beatles, right, who came from the UK, who admitted that, yeah, all this music is from, like, Black music, right? So it's, like, it's really weird, especially now where you see that the cultural logic of neoliberalism commodifies identity while leaving the racial sort of political economy and structure intact. And it is really baffling that, like, whether it's influencers, whether it's people like Ariana Grande who, like, does, like, a new race every fucking week or something like that, right? It's, like, really, really weird to see that, yet, I mean, whether you want to talk about, like, just the history of the United States, but in recent memory, the uprising a couple years ago, right? I mean, like, how is it possible that, like, I'm existing in this society where, like, everything that I am culturally and what I stand for, right, also exists in the same space where I can, like, get shot by a cop, like, any fucking day of the week, you know what I mean? It's something that, like, I don't know. It's very difficult to contend to. And I'll just close out. But I think another recent thing that we saw was Will Smith, right? I mean, we don't have to get into it, right? But the slap. It's like, okay, this dude has had a spotless career for 30 years, right? And then he does some dumb shit, which I think it was stupid. But, I mean, it wasn't something for him to get sanctioned for. You know what I mean? So it's like, you know, I guess that being said is like, you know, as a Black person, especially as a Black man, you go through American society doing the right thing and trying to appeal to white people. And then the minute that you even slightly fuck up, they're pulling out the nooses, you know?
Incarcerating Black men is like the true pastime.
It really is.
Like the beloved cultural pastime. Like, and if they can do that, like, not just like literally incarceration, but in terms of like the fixation on the crimes and travails of Black men specifically, and tracking them, like every athlete, an object of, because this is the thing from like the Orientalist tradition, is that like the racialization of, say, like Muslims, Orientals, or, you know, in my case, Iranians or something, is not as intensive, right? Or it's not as, it's completely different. It's not really in comparison, because first of all, it's recent. I mean, it's recent in the sense of like the daily life and stuff. Like Orientalism is old, but the relatively minor role that people from West Asia have played, and of course, Orientalism isn't specifically like about West Asia or Middle East or China and stuff. It's a larger terminology. But however to say it is that anti-Blackness is unique insofar as that it's in the DNA of the country. Like almost literally, I mean, actually literally,
literally,
like,
yeah,
like the rape of Black women, and combined with the fungibility of Black men and also women too, like their and their labor. That's the construction of the U.S. Like every institution, like, you know, every facet of American life saturated anti-Blackness, both historical and to this day. And it's like an overriding aspect of like American, like I would say, like, I don't know, identity is not like a word that I associated with America, because it's not like it's a settler colonial country. However, it is one of the sort of important threads that unites like an otherwise like pretty disparate and fictional place, right? But like anti-Blackness unites the, you know, Southern proletarian with the like a suburban Chicago Democrat, you know, with the like California surfer, you know, with, you know, the Iowa farmer. Like that's something that links them. My dog is being annoying. Daisy, just sit. Thanks.
No.
So like that's, yeah, like it's an impossible thing. I can't even imagine what it's like to be like an African-American man and be the, like, and just be such an intense object of fascination, but also of discipline, of just like, you know, just you're always under observation.
Absolutely.
In so many profound ways.
Absolutely. You know, you got me thinking about the fact that like, so like the shoot, whenever there's a police shooting that happens, right? I don't watch these videos, right? Because I don't need to watch them, right? But whenever I watch these videos, they exist in this sort of libidinal economy, right, of the United States, which means to say it's sort of like almost metaphysical, right? It involves all of these like very material things, you know, political economy, and then, you know, culture, base and superstructure, all of these things. But I'm saying it's something that like it sort of exists like as a spook in the minds of Americans, right? And there's this fascination to see Black people being either tortured, whether it's physically, whether it's economically. There's this obsession with seeing Black people suffer and languish, you know? And I don't know if it's like, I'm not a very, we're speaking on Easter Sunday, and I don't know, I'm not a very biblical person, but it almost seems like some sort of, or spiritually, but it seems like it's sort of some sort of cleansing, right? Or some sort of ritual. It's very ritualistic. And I mean, you could even look at like, you know, I don't want to ramble here, but I feel like these are connected, because you can even look at the Civil War, right? And how, why is it that a state like New York, for example, you can see, I've seen a Confederate flag flying in the window of a Brooklyn apartment, you know, or in California, for example, right? And why is it that these were free states? But it's because the Civil War sort of created this bifurcation of the country that wasn't just North and South, but it was, I mean, it was like white and Black, right? It was like anti-Blackness versus racism versus the hope or the promise of a multiracial social democracy, right? Which, you know, for a lot of reasons, but part of that, I think, died with Reconstruction as well, right? And I mean, it's as you said, it's something that like I really have to like personally, on a personal anecdotal level, like I kind of have to walk through life like sort of like on eggshells, or as if I'm walking on a minefield. There's all sorts of expectations that I'm supposed to meet, or if I don't meet these expectations, then it only confirms what white people already think about me. Like, quick example, I went to night school because I wasn't a good student, so I graduated late and went to night school, and I had a professor who was for economy, because I'd taken an economics course for economics, and we had to write this essay on, I think, what was it? It was Malthus and I forget the other guy's name. It's slipping my mind right now. But you know what I'm talking about. These two approaches, whether or not there's the pessimistic sense where we're dealing with overpopulation and famine, or whether or not I guess there are more positive benefits, right, to, I guess, structuring society around population. I hope this makes sense to people. Malthus, I remember that specifically, that I had to write this essay.
And Bozrup.
Yes, exactly. And I had to write this essay, and like, dude, I'm a writer, right? I've always been a writer. And, you know, I wrote this essay, and I don't know anything about, you know, the topics, but I'm, you know, research, man. I'm looking up, and I bring it back to my professor, and he says, oh, did you plagiarize this, you know? Like, was this plagiarized? And it's like, well, dude, like, immediately, I'm like, man, if I was white, you know, you wouldn't have said that. It's because you're, you know, this is a night school where most of the students are black, or, you know, or black and brown, which... It's a host of reasons for that, which again lead to like political economy, right? In my case, I was just like a lazy fucking kid, but also can't discount the external, but I'll be honest, I was a lazy fucking kid, right? But it doesn't matter. I did what I was supposed to do, and I'm being told that actually I expected you to do worse. And the fact that you did better, I'm not even going to grant you, right, any sort of congratulations for that. I'm going to assume the worst, right, because of who I think you are. And yeah, man, that's maddening, right? Being that, as you said, figure of ire and expectation in American society, it's maddening.
I always wondered, is there an inherent link between being an object of constant surveillance, like both at like the anecdotal level of like everywhere you go, but also at a social level of like, oh, what's happening in the black community today? Because that's an Orientalist, that's like a similar thing I recognize from like the history of Orientalism too, is that you make a problem out of people. Like it's a question. So like, you know, so like, oh, the Negro question. Like, I'm sorry to use that word, but like how liberals phrased it as that even in the early days of like, I don't know, 19th century like abolitionism, it was like structured around like, oh, the problem isn't white supremacy and all of its like valences and all of its structures and everything that it makes for itself, but it's in fact it's the objects of its obsessions that you then like have to then, you know, you have to, in a way, I don't know, I was thinking like, so is that a connection between being an object of constant surveillance and also the vanguard? Like is there a relation to that because you are so like watched and like black people are so consumed, like their behaviors and their tastes and their influences, and they are like so fetishized as like their culture is so like fetishized as cultural objects.
Yeah, that's a really good point. You just made me think of it. That's a really good point because you know, I've always said that like it's not an original idea. It's not something I came up with, but the fact that like, you know, America's biggest export is besides imperialism, right, and genocide, is a culture, you know. And it's really interesting that like materially, right, you had like this process of kidnapping people, right, from Africa and bringing them to the United States. And now you kind of have this process of diffusion in terms of culture, right, where all of this that you've kind of like taken away and that has been, I mean, how else can I say it? That has been kind of brewing, right, for the past couple hundred years, right? All the culture and art that has come out of that, and even like politics, right? All of that is now sort of going back out into the world, right? Like, it's really, you know, it's really weird to see, like, it's not weird, actually, it's dope, but it's interesting, I should say, to see rappers from the African continent, right, who are, like, it's weird for me to say that they're, like, adopting like rap music, because rap music is influenced a lot by a lot of things, but mainly by like African music as well, right? So it's like, you know, in black American music, we're talking about jazz, right, or R&B. So it's really weird to see, I don't want to keep saying weird, but it's funny. It's weird for me as someone whose parents are from Jamaica, but I'm a black American, right? So it's interesting to be like, oh shit, like, dude, like these dudes are like, they're the original creators of this shit, but they're mimicking what we're doing in the United States. Like, it's really bizarre and it's really odd, man, how black culture seems to continue to go through these layers and layers and layers depending on what is happening. And I mean, maybe we'll get to it too, but when you talk about the political, now there's a side of it where especially if we're talking about nonprofit sort of, you know, the organizing space. I don't even call it organizing. That's another layer where, of course, neoliberalism has had a hand, right? You know, so, but yeah.
Well, I mean, this is the other place where Black people, specifically like African-Americans, although this is also true for Europe too, that there is this widespread belief among the left, which doesn't exist. But
exactly.
We talk about that.
The left doesn't. There's no U.S. left. There's no Western left. It doesn't exist. We're cooked.
It's an online movement, but whatever you want to call that, like that imagined community called the left, is that there is this widespread belief that revolution is going to be midwife by urban insurrection. Okay, urban insurrection. Let me translate that for you. If you don't understand what that means, that means Black people dying on the streets, like by the thousands. That's what they mean. Like that's what that means in the U.S. That doesn't like. I mean, yeah, it also means a lot of different kind of racialized communities. But that's the nature of U.S. police state, is that it's geared towards it. Its settler colonial origins are very and it's like race war, like the kind of like constant, you know, a view of itself and being this sort of like never-ending race war within itself against indigenous people, but on the other hand, against the urban or like the undering labor classes. That's the like economic reality, is that you do have this racialized underclass of people who are a disproportionate participant at certain places, like in culture, and excluded very like publicly and very like, you know, so it's like a weird contradiction of like the apartheid nature of the U.S., but also then at the same time the starkly sort of like glass ceiling that exists for Black people. They're like, okay, you can excel here, just here, like, and you could do really well, and we'll in fact like fetishize you, and we'll reward you, and we'll never stop talking about you if you do certain things, but it can only be here.
Exactly. And even if it is something in the realm of politics, right? You know, Obama, I mean, famous example, right? First Black president. It still is within, I mean, you could only, even like someone like Obama in his mind could only conceive, right, to be president if he already acquiesced, right, to this white ideal, right? So when you talk about whiteness, right, whiteness is like, I mean, it's always been a shifting category, you know? I will admit, obviously, that like, you know, Europeans can be from European descent. People from European descent can be racialized. Of course, we see this happening. We see this happening with Russia right now, with the Russophobia, very much harkening back to, as you were saying, Orientalism. You see this with the Irish and the German in the 19th, 20th century. I mean, when the Irish came here, they weren't considered white, right? To the United States, to New York, right? But because of certain physical characteristics in which, yes, they, I mean, how, I don't know what else to say. Like, they look like white people in New York. Because I'm originally from New York. I'm in Atlanta now, but I'm from New York. We called those police vans paddy wagons, right? And my dumbass as a kid, well, I'm not dumbass. You don't know the origin of like certain terms. As a kid, I never knew that. And I was like, oh shit, man. It's because the fucking Irish, which is not even a stereotype, man. Like, I don't care what anyone says. It's because in order to become white, to be considered white, what did you have to do? You had to beat up Black people. You had to be a fucking cop to do that, right? And within the Black community as well, I remember reading with my co-host Jamie Peck. I remember reading on her podcast, The Antifada. I had to read Obama's book, his newest book. I don't even remember what it's called. It's on my bookshelf, but thank God I didn't have to read all of it. But in that book, right, you understand that when he talks about race, a lot of his insecurities and a lot of his drive in life has to do with this confusion about racial identity, right? Because his father is from Kenya, right? His mother, right, is a white woman, right? So it's like he constantly has to deal with the expectation, right? Which is the expectation of being white, living up to a white ideal, which he does kind of admit, which also leads him to do things like throw under the bus like Reverend Wright, who said nothing wrong. He was completely honest when he talked about U.S. imperialism and the way the United States treats Black people. And Obama threw him under the bus, right? Or whether Obama should, I guess, honor, right, his Blackness, especially his roots, right? I went to Ghana. My sister got married in Ghana. And, I mean, you can see this in Africa, right? Which, like, in Ghana, there's a on the Gold Coast, there's a slave castle, right? And Apparently, Michelle Obama's family ancestors came or went through that that slave port, right? So there's like a plaque outside the slave castle that says, like, you know, has her name on it and Barack Obama's name as well, I think, or her name actually, because it's her family. And that is so fucking weird to me that, you know, and I'll give another example that Africans, right, can commemorate, right, the spouse or the wife of someone, even if not him, which Obama is not like a friend to Africa either, but the office of the presidency, right, the United States. Another similar example, my godmother, extended family, she was born in the UK, in England, and moved to Jamaica as a kid. And she has commemorative plates of the royal family in her house. And that's another thing that's weird to me, right? And I think this is like a Fanon thing, right, that I'm kind of getting at, where it's like you pick the these certain colonized subjects who are willing, in order to elevate their station in life and to get ahead, right, of their people, right? What they do is that they sell them out, essentially, you know, or they adopt or appeal to whiteness or whatever it is or will be that will get them out of this more oppressive, subjugated state. And I mean, that's something that I'll show up here, but that's something as a black dude that I have to think about, especially in the spaces of doing like podcasting, left podcasting, which is dominated by white people, right? Sometimes I got to be like, yo, man, like, am I holding back what I want to say because I don't know if white people would want to hear this? You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's like, yeah.